Hello and welcome. You're listening to Wordsmith, sponsored by Walls of Books. Hello and welcome. I'm Shannon Dominey, and you're listening to Wordsmiths. And I am so excited that you're here because this is our very first episode. Happy Valentine's Day. Appropriately, we will be talking about some romance novels this episode. I spoke with New York Times bestselling author Robin Carr, who writes mostly romance, so, you know, Valentine's Day. But she also has a handful of popular historical fiction titles. When I first picked up one of Robin Carr's books, I kind of expected it to be book candy, you know, a light, easy read, palatable and nice. I don't know why. Maybe just because I assumed romance equals light, but I was silly. What I got instead was a really, really wonderful set of complex characters that were dealing with real life issues. There was romance, yeah, and it was a really, really fun, sweet romance. But I was thrilled with the level of connection I had to her characters. So naturally, I was very excited to get to chat with her, and I think you'll really enjoy what all she had to say. So let's get to it. Hi, Robin. Thanks so much for taking some time to talk to me. We're so excited to have you on the podcast.
Oh, good. Good. Happy to be here.
I'm so glad. If it's all right with you, I'll just jump right in.
Go ahead.
Awesome. So what is your favorite book right now?
Oh, well, right now I don't really read a lot of suspense, but I'm reading J.T. Ellison's Lie to Me, and it's really, really good.
Oh, yeah? I haven't read that one yet. Is it fabulous?
It's fabulous. I'm not very far into it. I'm not halfway into it yet, but it's meticulous, and that's what you need in suspense, right?
Yeah, that's exciting. Cool.
Yeah.
Do you have an all-time favorite book that you name as your favorite book?
I have several. I was just thinking about The World According to Garp the other day. I remember loving... He was an author in the story. And I remember loving that aspect of the story. And I also have always loved The Shell Seekers. And I reread it recently, and it still holds up as an awesome domestic drama.
Awesome.
So cool. You know, and then there's Forever Amber and Gone with the Wind and my favorite romances, like The Flame and the Flower.
Awesome.
Which are completely outdated, but I love them.
I love that. Awesome. If you could buy all of your fans a book that wasn't one of yours, what would it be?
Oh, geez. I don't know. Maybe I would get them started on the Susan Elizabeth Phillips Stars series.
Okay.
Chicago Stars series with the first book. And that is such a fun series. It's so romantic and so sexy and so much fun.
Awesome. So I'm going to jump into sort of the nuts and bolts of writing a little bit. I'm sure you get asked these kind of questions a lot, but tell me a little bit about your writing process. Where do you write? When do you like to write? And like, what tools do you use? Do you use pen and paper or a computer, or what do you like to do?
Well, I write at the computer. I have an office in my home. I get up in the morning and get coffee on my way to my desk. And I pretty much stay here all day, except for appointments and chores and errands and phone calls and, you know, those sorts of things. I'm writing. I start early. I stop at 6.
Gotcha. Cool.
And I work 7 days a week, usually.
Yeah, I hear that from authors, that they work 7 days a week. Why do you feel like that is?
Because it's a hard job.
Yeah.
And it's incredibly competitive. And if you're gonna stay on top or get to the top, you have to really put your shoulder to the boulder and push. And you have to be good. And in order to be good, you have to do a lot of revising.
Yeah, that makes sense. How many times do you feel like you usually revise a work before you send it off?
Well, I'm one of those authors that likes to start on page one and just go and see where it goes, which means things will evolve as I'm writing. And so when something evolves, sometimes it means going back to the beginning and making space for it or setting it up or changing some things to accommodate the change. And I go back to the beginning often, so I have no idea how many times I actually revise, many, many, many times. And then when I think I'm done, I have to go back to the beginning and start again and revise from page one all the way to the end. Then my editor gets into the act.
Sure.
And then the copy editor gets into the act. So one book goes through many, many, many incarnations.
So how did, and I know this is a while back, but how did getting published change your process of writing? So how was your process before you were writing?
Well, darling, like, you know I got published first in 78.
I do. But was your process drastically different the first time you were putting stuff down on paper?
Oh, yeah, it was drastically different. I didn't have a computer.
Oh, well, sure.
I had my very first attempt was with a notebook and a pen, and then a typewriter, which was actually hard to afford, and I think I did my first three books on a typewriter, and then I got one of the very first computers, desktop computers available, and it cost more than my station wagon.
Yeah.
And it had a screen that was about 4 inches square. Oh, my. Anyway, yes, getting published, it throws you into the business of publishing. I was just talking to somebody about how writing has always been so much fun. There's a lot of other things to do that have nothing to do with writing, and it's all in the business of publishing.
Right. Well, are there parts of writing that you wish you could take out of the process? Like, are there parts you don't like?
Of writing? No.
Well, no, of being an author.
Of being an author? Yeah, I don't like being on the road.
Mm-hmm.
That's very difficult. It's very tiring. It gets more difficult and more tiring every year because traveling is a burden these days. And, you know, flights are difficult and you're always on the run, and flights get canceled, and security is different at every airport.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think being on the road is tough. I've never met an author who's been on tour that has said, "Oh, wasn't that fun?"
Yeah.
They all say, "Oh, my God, I'm so tired."
Sure.
So that's a hard part. And then there's all these little niggly things like your expenses. Putting your expenses together and managing your income and your taxes and paperwork, just paperwork, the same paperwork everybody has to do, whether they're authors or salesmen.
Sure. You don't think about that part of being a writer.
No, you don't, but it's there.
Well, what are some of your favorite parts?
Well, I really like telling the story. I haven't gotten tired of that in 40 years. It's so much fun to make up a story. And then there are those dark days, you know, when you think, oh, I knew it would happen. I'm completely empty. I have not one idea. I'm done. It's over. I'm washed up. And then you'll get an idea.
That's so cool.
It's almost miraculous, yeah.
So when those ideas come to you, do you do a lot of research to sort of inform characters and settings, or do you just sort of let them come when ideas come? How does that process work?
Well, I do a lot of research, but it's very fun, and I do most of it as I'm writing. I might need some preliminary information, you know, like mm-hmm. what does a doctor at this hospital do, or something like that, But a lot of it I can do as I'm writing. And in fact, it will spark ideas. And my favorite research, of course, I have Google. So is there anything in the world I don't know now? No. I'm an expert on absolutely everything. But there's one of my favorite types of research is interviewing people who actually live those professions. And live, and I mean, do you live in Colorado? Can we talk about that?
Mm-hmm.
That's my favorite research.
That's so cool. So how do you go about that? How do you go about finding those people? And then,
Find a number. Have you ever tried to talk to somebody? They will talk about themselves until you beg them to let you off the phone. You want to talk to a police chief? Just find the police chief on their website and call him and ask him about his job, and he'll talk to you forever.
That's true. People do like to talk about what they know.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So it's easy, actually. It's easy and it's fun, and you have to decide how you're going to best use it.
So what does that look like? Have you ever started using some research in a way and then realized that wasn't working?
I have made mistakes. Yes, ma'am. I have made mistakes. I do my best. Sometimes you don't know what you don't know. Like one of my famous mistakes that I never hear the end of is in Oregon, all the beaches are public. And so you can't have a private beach. And I had a private beach in the first Thunder Point book set in Oregon. And everybody who lives in Oregon wrote to me.
Every single one.
I'm sure. To tell me there were no private beaches, they were all public beaches, and if you had a house on the beach, you had to provide at, well, you couldn't have it on the beach. If it was on the foothills of the beach, you had to provide access to the beach. I said, okay.
Yeah, that's not even the kind of thing you would think to research.
Oh, and how about this? Would you ever think to research whether or not it's against the law to pump your own gas in Oregon?
I would not.
Well, neither did I.
Is it?
It is.
So all your gas stations are attended?
They are attended. There are two states, New Jersey and Oregon, where you can't pump your, you have no self-service gas stations. Who knew, right?
Yeah, that's fascinating. That's the kind of stuff that you don't even think to research.
Well, then my husband said to me when we went to Oregon to research, didn't you notice that I never pumped my own gas? And I said, why would I notice that? I could have cared less. I thought you were out talking to the attendant. I didn't know.
That's funny, because I think that would be something I might note just because in Georgia there's almost no attended gas stations, at least in my part of Georgia.
Yeah.
That's interesting. So, if you could tell your younger writing self anything, what would it be?
It would be to be patient.
Yeah.
Writing is a long-term commitment. You don't want to write a blockbuster. You want to have a very successful life as a writer, which means writing many, many books. And when you don't sell your first four books, they're not dead. They're waiting.
That's such a cool way to look at it. And I mean, that
It's the
makes
only
sense.
sensible way to look at it. People make a lot of really rash decisions because they want that passcode to the bestseller party. And they jump in before they've really tried to do better. You have to listen to what feedback you get on your book and try and determine if you think you need work on your storytelling or work on your writing. And at the same time, you have to trust your gut. And I've had a lot of books that I wrote years ago that have been bestsellers.
That's kind of amazing.
It happens all the time.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that makes sense. Would your advice to young writers now trying to be successful be any different than your advice to your own younger writing self?
No, that's the advice I give all the time. They don't like it.
Just to be patient.
To be patient, no, they don't like it. Nobody likes to be told to be patient. They like to be told how they can do it tomorrow, or even better yet, yesterday. I want it now. And people will say to me, how did you break out? What did you do to break out? And I say to them, I didn't. The readers broke me out. That's what you have to have, is a real secure body of readers that love your work and won't shut up about it. And how do you get that? Not by buying the most the best ad, but by writing good books if you can, as good as you can. That's very subjective.
Yeah, I guess that is super subjective. But it just for you was about persisting, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. It took me 30 years to be a best-selling author.
Yeah, that's amazing. So cool. So are you friends with other authors? And if so, how do they help you become a better writer?
Well, I am friends with other authors, with many other authors. I know a billion of them. We all run into each other all the damn time and all the same damn places, you know, at the conventions. So there are people that I've been seeing for 30 years or more. One of the first authors that I became friendly with was Nora Roberts.
Oh, cool.
Many, 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 many years ago. And Susan Elizabeth Phillips is still a close friend after over 30 years. And I know Debbie Maycomer and Linda Lael Miller and Kristen Higgins. And I see these people over and over again at romance writers and sometimes other regional conferences.
Mm-hmm.
And we talk, and sometimes we, with a trusted writer friend, you can talk about the book in progress or a plot problem.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that really helps you to be a better writer.
Yeah, that makes sense. Sort of getting an outside perspective from someone who's gone through it too.
Yeah.
Okay,
exactly.
Cool. So your newest series is Sullivan's Crossing, right?
Right.
So can you tell me a little bit about that? I've read the first one and I adored it. I haven't gotten my hands on the second one.
I loved writing that book. Wasn't that a fun book?
It's so fun.
It's so sweet, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Cal Jones is the best book boyfriend. So the story is, it's set in the small town of Timberlake and the crossing, which is where the general store is. It's run by Sully.
Mm-hmm.
And a variety of characters march across the pages because in the second book, Cal's youngest sister comes to town to be near her brother. And in the third book, their brother comes to town.
Oh, cool.
And
okay.
After getting out of the army. And then there are some new characters being introduced, but I'm staying in the same setting because some of my anchor characters, like Cal and Maggie and Sully, who owns the store, have become beloved to the readers.
Yeah.
And I listen to them, and when they love somebody, I try to breathe new life into them whenever I can.
Yeah. I definitely loved Cal and Maggie. And Maggie especially, I felt like, was very real. Like, I really loved being in her head. Like, I mean, obviously, she was kind of stressed through most of the book, but still, it's a really lovely place to be, to kind of see her work through things.
So let me tell you something. The book opens with her hiding in the staircase and crying.
Right.
My son is a surgeon, and he said, she can't cry. And I said, yes, she can. And he said, no, she would never cry. Somebody will say to her, you can't cry, neurosurgeons don't cry. And I said, exactly my point, why she's in the staircase. I can't count the number of letters I got from people saying that was so real. If you're in a job, particularly in a man's world, you get out of sight before you let them see your emotion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I really
And if
really
you're a man,
that.
You don't do it. You just don't do it.
Right. And I thought that was a really cool glimpse into her world of her dealing with all of these different struggles that have heaped on her all at once and just kind of train wrecked her life. And meanwhile, she's trying to be super, super strong.
Yeah. Yeah. And flawless and fearless and, you know, gotta be tough. I work in my pajamas. I don't have that.
I love it. So talk to me a little bit about writing the perfect book boyfriend. I love Cal Jones, and I love his jeans that are ripped in all the right places and all of those little details that you put in about him.
I know.
How does
Isn't
that process?
He the best?
Yeah, he's
Well,
great.
He's the book boyfriend. The book boyfriend is, I think, the sexiest part about, they all look good, mm-hmm. but the sexiest part about a good book boyfriend is he has great integrity. And he's vulnerable, but very, very strong. And isn't that what we want? Mm-hmm. I mean, we don't want some hard body that is dumb as a stump. We want a sensitive, vulnerable, and powerful man.
Yeah.
And he is. He is. I mean, when he was, when he found the place for his late wife's ashes, I mean, didn't that kill everybody? That just tore everybody apart and made everybody, every woman in America want to take him in her arms.
Mm-hmm. And I really loved that you allowed him to show emotion, because even while you're sort of juxtaposing that Maggie is having to hide her emotions in like a man's world, you're letting Cal be sensitive. And I love that.
I love that too. That's really fun. That's mm-hmm. really, really fun. But that's what I do. I mean, that's what I've done since Virgin River. And mm-hmm. that's why the girls like them.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of the dream, isn't it? The guy that wants to be sensitive and connect with you.
Yeah, exactly. We should get more men reading these books.
Hey, I think you've got it. So, one of my last questions is, what's one question no one ever asks you in interviews that you wish that they would? What's something you want people to know that they don't?
Oh, gosh. I should have had some preparation for that one.
Sorry to blindside you.
I'm not sure. Let me think.
Okay.
I have been asked this. In fact, I think I've been asked it by you. I think people should know that writing is really hard brain work, and it's very, very tiring. It's like studying for exams all the time,
mm-hmm.
and it's supposed to be hard work, and it's hard to be successful at it, and I'm glad that it's hard. I think that people should go into it expecting it to be hard, not easy, not fast. It's demanding. It should demand something of you. That's what makes it so important.
Yeah. Why do you feel like, do you feel like it's harder sometimes than others to get through certain characters or certain stories?
Oh, sure. Some books are harder than others. But you know what I've found? Those books that write themselves, you've been thinking about it for a long time, and when you finally sit down and get it right, it just writes itself, and you're done in no time, and it's not a struggle. Those are sometimes the best books.
Yeah?
Yeah. They're not only the ones you enjoy the most as a writer, but your readers seem to enjoy them most. It's effortless, and it's easy, and it's slick, and it goes real quickly, and the story is real easy to read, and it's fun. Those are fun books. The books that I struggle with the most are not always the most popular.
Even with that, you still say that it's a good thing that writing is hard?
Oh, yeah. I think it's a good thing it's hard. Just because it seems to write itself doesn't mean you don't have to work and you don't have to think and check every detail and go back and make sure that character was right or that plot line was on target or that you made all the right transitions. I mean, you can go back and rewrite it and revise it, and it's still hard work. But the ones that come a little easier and slide onto the page, I love those books. I think I'm due one.
What percent would you say are the easy ones?
Oh, man. I'm not sure. Maybe 10 or 15%.
Wow.
Most of them are pretty hard. And the emotional ones are pretty hard.
Is there any particular book that sticks out in memory as being one of the more emotionally taxing?
Oh, recently, The Summer That Made Us was mm-hmm. very emotionally taxing.
What did you find it's hardest so about it?
Well, it's so dysfunctional.
Yeah.
The people are so dysfunctional. And I worried maybe that they were too dysfunctional. And I remember way back when, over 30 years ago, when I had read The Woman's Room, that feminist novel, and it was made for TV movie, and I made my husband watch it with me. And one of the housewives of the 50s was, her doctor kept giving her Valium. Another one was being abused by her husband. Another one was, going through a divorce. Her husband was having an affair. All of these things were going on. And my husband said, "This is so unrealistic." And I said, "This is our cul-de-sac."
That's too bad.
I mean, really, you know, all of that stuff. You look at your own family and your own neighborhood and your own place of business, you find all of those dysfunctions. Mm-hmm. And they exist in real life. But I still worried whether or not it was too dysfunctional or too complicated. And I think it wasn't, because people are really responding well to it.
Well, I think you don't always necessarily get that in books. You don't always get all of the layers that real life has. But when it comes right. out in a book, it people do really respond to it.
Right, right.
Because it feels more real.
It does. It does. Families, what Pat Conroy used to say, families, contact sport.
Well, it has just been a joy to talk to you. I so appreciate you taking the time to chat with me a little bit.
My pleasure.
How can our listeners follow you? Do you have social media, or is it just your website?
There's Facebook, there's my website, there's links on my website, robincarr.com, and there's podcasts, and there's videos, and there's just everything a lonely girl could want.
Fabulous. Well, thank you so much, Robin. I so appreciate it.
You're welcome, honey. Thank All you. Right.
And that was Robin Carr, everybody. I just had so much fun talking with her, and I hope you guys really enjoyed it. She has so much experience and so many interesting thoughts about writing to share. She was awesome. To keep up with Robin and see what she's up to next, you can go to robincarr.com. That's RobinCarr.com. And to keep up with us, follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Wordsmiths Podcast. You can also subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts to make sure you never miss an episode. And please rate and review each episode. It helps other people find us. If you want to suggest an author for us to interview or a topic for us to cover, you can email us at wordsmithspodcast@gmail.com. And if you have a book review you'd like us to share, please email an audio clip or written review to the same email. And make sure you tune in next month. The owner of Walls of Books in Watkinsville and Commerce, Greg Phillips, does the interview for next month's episode with New York Times bestselling author Jeff Shara, author of Gods and Generals. They talk a lot about how Jeff Shar writes, his process, and how he inherited his writing legacy from his father. So please tune in. You've been listening to Wordsmiths with me, Shannon Dominey. Music is Inspirational Life from sound.com. And the producer was Miles Williams. Wordsmiths is sponsored by Got Walls and Walls of Books Bookstore in Macon, Georgia. If you're interested in becoming an owner-operator of Walls of Books franchise, call 1-888-94-BOOKS. That's 1-888-942-6657. And mention the podcast. Thanks so much.